It's your girl, Queen Sunny Honey, and welcome to another edition of Freedom Fridays. Welcome to the Caribbean Radio Show, where we are the Knowledge Station. That's right. Today's topic is hot and popping. Honey, we're just going to hit it in the head and let's talk money, honey. We're going to talk about generational wealth. Yes, leaving a legacy for foundational Black Americans. And I just want to start off the topic with saying that Dr. Champagne Odom is again coming to bless the people with this topic this week. This is something major that we have to consider, knowing that we have celebrities, considering DMX passed away with $1 million divided by 15 children, leaving them approximately 30-something thousand dollars apiece. 15 children. Imagine if he only had 3 or 4 children. So yeah, as soon as we get into this topic, it's not just about leaving money to your children. It would be more if you had fewer, so we're not going to compare, but let's look at the element of having so many seeds that it's less for those left over. Dr. Odom, are you on the line with us today?
Yes, I am here. Thank you so much for having me.
Welcome, honey. I hear that December 10th is about to be some extraordinary day in your life. Is it still a secret?
Still a secret, yes.
So guys, stay tuned. Come December, I can't wait for the secret to get out and hit the entire world, from Japan to Americas to all of the Middle East. The secret will be out in December. Stay tuned. Dr. Odom is going to share something amazing with us. And by New Year's, Dr. Odom is going to have some special surprises for you as well. So prepare for a lot of December announcements. And we're going to power up as we grow and glow. Dr. Odom is bringing everyone else along this journey. So thank you so much for visiting us. How was your week this week?
My week was good, but this week, for some reason, my universities had the week off. I don't know why. So for the last 4 days, including today, I've been babysitting, and it was super helpful because I mentioned the last couple of shows that I've been sending money home to my mother because, you know, like I said, COVID has affected everyone. So I just want to do my part to make sure that she has what she needs.
Yes. Turning and looking back, one of the terms we call Sankofa in Ghana is those who turn and look back and help others. Speaking of which, LeBron James, did you see what he did when he turned and looked back and helped out the masses? Did you see that on social media?
Yes, I saw on Facebook. Yeah, go ahead.
Tell the people about it, sis.
I did. I was on my mother's page. So shout out to LeBron James. He's from Akron like we are. So LeBron, and I didn't get a chance to really read the post, but he made the, I think I Promise School. I'm not sure how long ago, but I believe he helped 193 children graduate from high school, and they got free scholarships to go to the University of Akron. So shout out to him for that.
That's right. And this is symbolic now because what he created then is actually manifested. All of them, 100% of those students, the first class has just gotten recognized. Mm-hmm. They graduated. All of their tuition is paid. Nearly 200 students. So shout outs to you as well as LeBron James, that no matter where you guys have gone and soared in life, you have turned and looked back. You have truly Sankofa, reached out and helped others with the fruit of your labor, whether it's what you're doing with babysitting that's carrying mom through COVID, and what LeBron is doing now. That's an army. He is building an army. Mm-hmm. Think about it, man. And as far as COVID
that's
is
right.
concerned, everybody who's listening, please be careful. I woke up this morning on Freedom Friday and noticed that in Europe, there is a whole nother wave. So we're getting different things that are happening around the globe, and we want people to just be safe. I know you want to travel in December, do your thing, but make sure you're watching out, because a layover, it might not be the best thing if you have a layover in some of these countries that are having some issues. So let's be careful.
Wow.
Let's get into this topic. What brought this to your heart today? The topic of the legacy that we live, the generational wealth by foundational Black Americans.
Well, what brought this topic to me is, I mean, I think it was really two things. Well, maybe three things. First, DMX died, a legendary rapper, one of the best, definitely top 10. Also, famous actor A.J. Johnson from, do you guys remember Ezell from Friday?
Yeah, Ezell. With the toilet paper.
And he also played, and I got the hook up with Master P. He played Blue. And Master P played Black, I think. So, or Black. He was either Blue or Black, but he was in I Got the Hook Up with Master P. So he's very, very talented. That would be the second one. And I think the third reason is because, like, my whole platform is always, hey, guys, come to Japan, use these four steps, and then I want you to use that money, build wealth, leave that wealth for your generation, leave that wealth so we can all go back home eventually and rebuild foundational Black America. So that's just my whole platform there. But those three things are what has prompted me to talk about this topic.
What got me was I heard about a couple of foundational Black Americans that had moved to Dubai, didn't have any children, and now they have loads of children, and they're struggling financially, not leaving a legacy because, unlike America, you know, people are paying tuition in these really expensive countries. And, it, you know, your topic today really made me concerned with our need to be that new money generation, just like the entertainers that you're bringing up, trying to just do the most right now, you know, without considering what it's going to be like for the children if they inherit the debt, which is real, or, you know, by moving over to Dubai and now you're paying tuition for over five kids, what kind of assets are you having? Are you robbing Peter to pay Paul? Was it really worth it? Are you thinking about the numbers of children that you're having? Also, coming from America myself, I love this topic because oftentimes no one is talking about just spreading your seed. The Black men who just go around just spreading your seed. And when they're proud to say, I got 30 kids, well, does your bank account reflect that you could take care of those 30? Are you going to be negligent? And, you know, is the wealth that's left over for them one that you can say, while I wasn't there, each one of my 30 kids got $1 million when I died. I had an insurance policy laid up for them. So let's get into this topic today with leaving wealth. Start us off.
Well, you know, before I continue with that, I think what you said was so profound about the Dubai people or the American couple going to Dubai and now they have kids and they can't afford to pay tuition. It's really funny because, you know, people always kind of try to dish English teachers or teachers that go overseas. But as a teacher, if you're working at an international school, your children, in theory, are supposed to go to that school for free. So it kind of makes me wonder, what was that family like? What does the dad do? What does the mom do? Because if they're struggling to pay tuition, that means their school, that means either they're not really an expat or they're not a teacher and their kids aren't going to the school that they could be teaching at.
In this
so that instance, is definitely they, something to think about.
They are teachers, but they've just got too many kids.
Kids do they have?
I'm thinking over five. These are just randomness. You know, one of these contracts you're referring to, you are correct. You do get either discounts or free, but this is not meant for a tribe of only over five kids because these schools are businesses. This is not like traditional America where you're saying K through 12, my mother never came out of pocket. When we're talking Middle East, picture this. You say a man has three wives. Each wife has five kids. And the faith over in this region where I live, they can only attain wives that they can afford, which means every calendar year, That man writes tuition 30,000 times 15 children, and it is nothing. Last week's show, I told you, if there are things that are on sale, this population of people, they don't buy those things because they feel like something's wrong with it. That's that much wealth that for 12 years plus college, 15 kids to pay for their tuition is nothing. Average American family, we're just trying to get the foundational black folks to save up for 4 years of college. You got 18 years of not paying nobody's tuition. So in the case of the couple that's in Dubai, is, you know, when you have one or two kids, they can go for free and they might even get a discount. But when you exceed that, you're not able to do all the extra things that you thought that you could do.
Right. Wow. That makes a lot of sense. Wow. Yeah. Especially in Dubai. Oof. Wow. Well, thank you for clearing that up. Great. Now, your question to me, could you repeat that? Because I went a little bit off topic.
Actually, let's get into it with these celebrities, what that means, that we're looking up to celebrities right now and saying, you know, whoever you are, you can name the genre of rapper or someone in the sports industry, having too many kids, how does that look for your legacy with propriety?
Well, I think, like for example, DMX, like, love DMX. I bought his CD, or not even CD, online music the other day. I was listening to it, and I was like, this man is a genius. But, I mean, just because you're talented does not mean that that translates into being financially talented as well. I mean, DMX, I think we all know he had a very bad drug problem. You know, somebody laced his stuff when he was 14, and then it just, you know, took over from there. But the fact that this man was a platinum artist and was, I would say, probably top five, really, in being a rapper, and he had 15 kids, and the fact that he only had $1 million left over, and out of 15 kids, I believe, like, each one got, like, $37,000, that made me think of two things. Number one, you should, I mean, if it were not for the drugs, he should have what, in my opinion, maybe Beyonce and Jay-Z's level money, in my opinion. I mean, maybe a little bit less, you know. And also, number two, his first wife, I don't know if he ever got married again. It makes me think, did she not have life insurance on him? I mean, I know they got divorced, but if you have life insurance on your partner, even if you get divorced, you can keep it. And if they die, then you can cash it out. So it made me think, so she didn't have life insurance on him, or is that just not part of his wealth? So it just made me think of a lot of things. And the third thing I thought about, I actually got another life insurance policy on one of my family members. I'm not going to say which one, but the policy is for $150,000, right? And if four of my family members, like my immediate family members, if we split that, then that means each of us would get $37,500. So I was like, wait, you mean to tell me a teacher in Japan who, like, you know, who's not even on the level of DMX, right? So my, like, the four of us would get the exact same thing that your 15 kids would get. It just made me think, like, I don't want to say it's pathetic, because it's not pathetic, but it's just like, wow, these celebrities, some of them really ain't got it going on like you think that they do, because in my opinion, he could have been like a billionaire. I mean, he's just that brilliant with his talent, but it just takes more than that. So, I mean, just, I think blacks, specifically foundational black Americans, and even the celebrities, we got to do better. And I don't think we should really be looking up to them, because if you are a multi, you know, selling artist like DMX and your estate is $1 million, I mean, what are we praising you for? So that it just... Really, kind of hurt me, because I was like, man, I feel so bad for his kids.
Girl, you're taking me back to TLC days, when I remember watching a documentary where they said the world knew them and they were so famous, but they were not collecting any money. You triggered me to the moments where I know some foundational black Americans on this planet right now that get their checks garnished and they bring home nothing based on their sexual desires that they didn't think about the consequences and all of those child support payments. So they're walking around looking like cool unk that got the, you know, he got his degree, student loan debt. He got all the kids garnishment from his check. So when people see him in the streets, he's still super clean. But the reality is that check from that company, HR knows you're bringing home way less because you're dealing with the consequences. So you're right. And here's another thing. Candy Burris from the group, I think it was Escape, whatever. No, not Escape. Candy.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. She mentioned she's the only celebrity that I've ever known to talk about getting insurance policies. She went around back in the day and just started putting insurance policies on other celebrities she knew in the industry, people in her family. And when I watched her in a documentary, it could go over a lot of people's heads what she was talking about. But I'm sitting here like, man, at the end of the day, black people, the worst scam of it all is for you to idolize celebrities and for them to be great in their industry, but not the savant of their own finances, whether it's the TLC thing, like performing every night. That's slavery, indentured servitude. You didn't get a check, but you got some cute clothes. That triggers to the element of girls that give up their bodies.
So basically you're a child.
Exactly. Or let's talk about when the little girl who's a virgin who starts being sexually active because someone is giving her Red Lobster meal in exchange for her body. Okay, girl, 18-year consequence of having a child.
Wow.
Or a woman who's saying, I'm laying down with someone because they're going to pay this bill. Girl, that bill is reoccurring, so what you going to do? We have to have a relationship with money that's different. Give the people what the recipe on how we can break through in this. What does it look like?
Oh, okay. Well, in order for... Oh, I can go. Okay. Well, in order for us to, you know, to break through this not leaving wealth, I think we need to define what wealth is. And what I define wealth is when you leave money or assets that can be used to build more assets or generate more money. So, for example, in my opinion, and shout out to Rich Dad Poor Dad, a house is not what I call generated wealth alone, because a house, and I had to explain this to my boyfriend, is a liability unless you're selling it or unless somebody is living in it and you're renting it out. But if you're just saying it, it's your greatest liability, it's not an asset. And there's three steps that I wrote out. If you want to leave generational wealth, and yes, but this is also for other blacks as well, you need to, number one, decide the type of opportunities you want your children to have. So for example, do you want your kids to go to private schools? Do you want your kids to travel overseas? Do you want them to go to private universities? Do you want them to be in sports? I mean, these are questions that you need to ask. And I think just in terms of me, like my parents were together until I was 15 and then they split. Well, actually, my mom left my dad. Well, we left my dad. But that's another story. But like my mother always wanted more for her children. Now, because she was a single mother, she herself couldn't provide the opportunities. However, she was able to put me into positions where I can get scholarships, and those scholarships could provide those opportunities. So because I ran track, I traveled all over the world, and because I ran track, I got to go to university, and then I got more scholarships to study all over the world. It's like I said, you either leave money for the kids or you have to find another way to get them those opportunities. Step two, what lifestyle do you live? Like, for example, for me, I'm super frugal. I've always been very, very frugal. I love sales. I know you said in Dubai or the Middle East, they don't like them. I love sales so much. And the reason why I'm super frugal is because I like to travel. Now, I really stopped traveling when I got about 37 because I was going to Africa. But then, I don't know, I just stopped traveling and then, you know, the whole COVID thing. So I'm kind of chill now. I've been to like 30 countries. I've studied abroad 5 times in four different countries. I've lived in three or four different countries. So, you know, I'm kind of traveled out. I've done that. Now it's time for me, you know, to become a mother, to become a wife. So, but anyways, my point is, which lifestyle do you want to live? Because if you want a lifestyle that's super frugal, that's good, because not only can you save for your own retirement, you can also put money aside for your children. But if you are like flashy and you like nice things, there's nothing wrong with that, but you have to be able to afford it so that once again, you can save for your retirement and also have money for your kids. You need to have a budget so that, you know, once again, if you know what to save every month and you know what to save for your kids every month. Okay. Number three, life insurance. Life insurance is a big thing. Like I said, DMX, like, I don't know if they had life insurance on him. I'm not sure, but I mean, each of your 15 kids getting $35,000, whereas when I just took out life insurance on one of my family members, $150,000 divided by four, that's $37,500 for four people. I mean, that's pretty good. That's pretty good money, you know? Not that I want any of my family members to die, but people really sleep on life insurance. AJ Johnson, one of my favorite comedians, like when he died, his wife had to take out a GoFundMe. And I wouldn't even say that he was like an A-list celebrity. He might have been B, maybe C. But the point is, life insurance, if you start in your 20s, is literally $100 a month. And it goes up as you age. But you mean to tell me you guys couldn't even take $100, even if it's $500 for the year, and have life insurance on him? Life insurance is an asset. It's just an asset that you yourself can't touch because you have to be dead for your beneficiaries to get it. But as you can see, we all have to go sometime, you know, we got to transition to the next plane of life. So, I mean, we really need to get it on with life insurance. I mean, shout out to Dr. Umar Johnson. He was saying in one of his interviews that when white people die, he said, you know, they leave life insurance policies so their kids or their grandchildren can have $100,000 when they get 18. And if they want to go to school, they can do that. If they want to start a business, they can do that. But he said, you know, but when blacks die, a lot of us die leaving a bill, which is not what we don't want to do. So once again, three steps: decide which opportunities you want for your kids. Number two, know your own lifestyle and be able to, you know, afford it so that you can retire yourself and put money away from your kids. And number three, have life insurance so that when you transition, that your kids have money and your grandchildren as well.
Okay, let's speak to the population that don't understand how to get life insurance. Earlier you mentioned it's best to take it out when a person, when they're, that individual that you take it for is in their 20s. What are the steps? Talk to us as if we don't know how to walk in, get the people empowered so that when they go to pick up the phone to get life insurance, they have a better understanding so that they won't get tricked.
Okay. Well, there's really two types of life insurance you can get. You can get term life, which is life insurance that somebody, that the beneficiary, so it, okay, let's say if I die, right, my beneficiaries would be my children. So life insurance means I have to die for the children to get the money. Whole life is like life insurance, but it doubles as an investment. So for example, if you take out a whole life insurance policy, let's say if it's $50,000, I think I was looking for some quotes. I think it might be like $200 a month, which is very expensive, but it is what it is. But let's say if I have $50,000, term life, and let's say I've been paying, you know, paying it every single month, and let's say it's gotten up to $50,000 within 10 years, and this is just an example, I can then take money from that investment and use it for whatever, but I have to pay it back. Okay, so once again, life insurance, term life means you have to die in order for the people to get the money, and the other one, I mean, you can borrow from it while you're alive, and then when you die, people will get the money. So hopefully you understand the differences with that. The next step is just simply to Google life insurance. Like, most people usually start off with term life because it's cheaper. Whole life is expensive. So, I mean, if you can't afford whole life, just get life insurance. Miss Sunny Honey, you said pick up the phone. Well, now you can just simply Google it. So just Google Life Insurance USA and maybe Life Insurance Ohio or whichever state you're from, there will be a Google result list. And you can always do, like, Aflac has a plan. They have a pretty good plan. You can do different quotes, and then eventually, put in your email address, your name, telephone number, and then you can eventually talk to somebody on the phone. I mean, that's just the steps. After they make contact with you or you call them, they'll send you the plan. You'll look it over. You'll ask questions, and then you'll probably pay, if not on the day, within the month, and then you'll be covered as soon as the policy starts. I mean, it's really, really easy. I mean, you can just simply do it literally online nowadays.
Here's a hood question from the hood. Can you take insurance out on someone without them knowing?
Oh, good question. Okay. I used to think the answer was yes, but what my agent told me is that if they're over 18, you can't. If they're under 18, you can. If they're over 18, you cannot. Unless they're your kids or your spouse.
All right. For those of you who are listening, I want to take you all the way back to the very first insurance policies in America. Those people who had the insurance policies were called slave owners. And the very first thing that they ever insured, according to Wall Street, was your black ass. That's right.
Quote, shout out to Black Friday. Shout out to Black Friday.
Okay, Black Friday sales. So if you understand anything about the foundational black history, you will know that countless numbers of people of color passed away in the hands of their slave masters. The only difference was because they bought them, considered them less than human. That's what made the difference. That every time they had these deaths and could whip them, they got paid, honey. So that's the thing that Dr. Odin is really trying to get. I know that everyone is struggling month to month paying bills, but the advice that she's given us today is to live within our means. Don't do
it's $10 a month to get life insurance, guys, by the way.
Yes, live within your means, because if you're allowing other populations of people, other demographics of people, to always let that be a part of their life skill. If you know that you are a foundational Black American and that all of your ancestors, you got to do it for them, because someone else got paid and it wasn't the family. Know the origin of life insurance. Know that you are deeply rooted in it. And the side effects, think about it. When people die, typically there's some medical. So when you go to the hospital, it's not a free hospital like the ones I have over here in the Middle East, where everyone walks in the door and all the surgeries and all the prescriptions are absolutely free. Yes, sir. I myself, not talking about something, I live it over here. So if you know in America that's not your circumstance, that the likelihood that before 10 days before you die, you're sitting in someone's hospital, that's debt. The other debt that you had, whether student loans or debt on your home, all those pieces that you owe, as soon as there's a death certificate, what happens is the government extracts your debt, and those who are your legacy are either going to be left with your debt, losing the house that you worked so hard, or they're going to be the beneficiaries of something that exceeds the amount of debt that's there. That's the goal, people. Dr. Odin,
you know what you said about losing the house that you worked so hard for, that's what I said earlier. What, shout out to Rich Dad Poor Dad, Robert Kiyosaki. Houses are liabilities, they're not assets unless you are using them to make money, and most people just live in a house, so the house is making money off of you. You know, you're supposed to be making money off of it, not the other way around. But yeah, what you said is it's true.
And then one element, and especially something called heirs' property. A lot of times people love that word. It means that grandma had a house, and when they died, they said, nobody can sell this unless everybody sign off on it. And at the time, for the person living, it sounded wonderful. But of course, in their demise, there's a lot of conflict that typically happens. Some want to sell, some want to hold on to it for the memories. And so, you know, once again, like Dr. Odin said, that becomes the real liability there, because no one is actually taking on that responsibility. It's not an Airbnb. It's not generating wealth. It's just generating a lot of arguments amongst the family.
So, wow. You know, people could turn their air houses into Airbnbs. That would be a good hustle right there.
That's right. And I challenge black folks, if you know you have any type of old property, let's say you're from the South. Your relatives got off the boat. They acquired a bunch of land. You still got land and a house there. But now you live in the Midwest or the West. Before you sell, I challenge you to discover whether or not it was a part of the Underground Railroad and just something so priceless that happened, so historical, battlefield for the Confederate soldiers, for the whatever it is, that you have the power and the technology through the internet these days to go back and stake claim, and actually whatever you think is worth very little could be the very thing that's your money maker. You know?
That's right.
Get out here, whoever owned, and to make it a reality, when we talk about generational wealth, if you are a foundational black American or a Caribbean person living in America, I want you to know that there are slave plantations that you can go to. I'm from South Carolina, so there are field trips all the time. Yes, that was triggering and traumatizing growing up. But I only bring it up to acknowledge that those houses are not taken away. Those houses had a legacy on your back that they're still standing. And every brick laid by you and that good old hardwood floor laid by you, people are paying money or little tickets to go in and visit that part of history. That's the asset element. And also, whoever had ownership of it is still here to this day. That's the point of the conversation today. That's what wealth looks like, passing down wealth. Because there's so many, if you can Google right now, everyone, plantations in America, you will find hundreds, if not thousands of them, that you can visit right now. So I want for you to think about it and say, if you got it going on financially, why don't you own that plantation that's in the South where your grandmother's from, that you knew your family used to live in, and now you're the black owner of it, your own legacy. If you're out here looking,
and you can even build a plantation. And I know a lot of people probably like, why would I do that? To make money. I mean, shout out to Tariq Nasheed. Put a Hidden Colors a museum on it and make money like that. I mean, it is your history. You can't profit from your own misery.
That's right. Someone else will. Even if you look at the historic HBCUs that we have, none of them, like, how much do we own as the black community? So when we're talking about legacy and wealth building, it's not to the renters. And I just want to say, some of the elements that you talk about, living within your means, while I love seeing people travel all the time and I love that we get our passports, if you don't have any assets but you're out here on taking flights, that's a problem. Live within your means, baby.
That's right. If you got absolutely right.
If you got to use that tax check so you could just, you know, fly to Vegas or fly to the Bahamas, fly to Jamaica, then your priorities, your children, okay, that's their college fund right there. You're paying rent. Right. You're living in government housing. Whatever your circumstances is not lining up. So we're going to have to change the trajectory of breaking that generational curse. It's going to start with your pocketbook.
Right. And another thing, like with, and what you said about living in government housing, I mean, I believe they about to stop that, because they brought over the Afghans. Those people got to live somewhere. And now they're about to give $115,000 to Hispanics who were separated at the border from their family per family member. So those people need somewhere to live too. So I mean, you said the trajectory has to be, you know, changed, but I mean, the U.S. is changing it for us. So the only way to fight is, you know, we're going to have to do, you know, what I like to call group economics, and that's it. You're going to have to change.
People, I know this topic is not really the one that's like, ooh, it's so sweet. Yeah, it's like some castor oil. It's going to be bitter, but it's meant to make you heal, to get us to the next level. It is not just as well to say that we have arrived, but it's important for myself, Queen Sunny Honey, and Dr. Champagne Odin to turn, look back, and to bring our people back. I want to take you to that movie Harriet Tubman for a second. Y'all remember that recent movie? It was the African sister that played the role. Now, Harriet returned to the plantation she was born, and she went to get her sister. Her sister said, no, I'm not going. I get it now. Wherever you have arrived, whoever you are amongst your mama's children, when you try to reach and just share the wealth of information so others can be free, sometimes people are going to say, I'm not interested. And you will be in a state of shock of knowing, like, okay, you're comfortable where you are in this state of slavery.
Wow.
And I will always continue to quote her saying, I saved hundreds, I could have saved thousands. If only they knew they were slaves, they didn't even know. So when Dr. Champagne tells you that they're changing, the government is making the changes for you, baby, you had better be proactive instead of reactive. There's a show right now, Oprah Winfrey did it, Queen Sugar. I don't know if anyone out in the audience is watching. The latest episode is some property that the family's had since slavery. And the strong legacy of saying, you know, passed down generation to generation. And in this latest episode, young man was given 45 days to vacate. So when you hear Dr. Odin say, be proactive, don't wake up tomorrow and have the government tell you that your Section 8 housing is now, you got to pack up and go and you don't have a plan. Don't ever wake up and have that man in that relationship that you're with, that you moved in his place, and now he's telling you, you got to go. You have to have the exit strategy, the very things that we were talking about. Dr. Odin, yes, ma'am. I know you have some tips for people that could help us get started on how do I change when I'm just learning this information now. You gave us the steps on the why, but what is the how?
Well, I mean, talking about how, I think we can quote John F. Kennedy. He was asking a German, I don't know if he was a physicist or an astronaut, he was like, how do you get to the moon? And the German guy said, you decide, you make a decision. So the first thing comes with, okay, I'm deciding that I'm going to change. That's number one. And then number two, you need to know exactly what it is that you want, so it's so crystal clear, so that you can reverse engineer and have the steps work backwards for you. And I really would like to talk about this next time too, about how to retire. I was listening to TBA, so Jason Black, and you know, the Black Authority, and he was saying how PBS has a program called the Retirement Hustle, which I know the Retirement Gamble, but they might as well say hustle because it is a hustle. And I watched that, and they were saying, like, you need $2 million to retire comfortably in the U.S. So, for example, if you know, okay, at age 65, I need $2 million to retire comfortably because maybe I'm going to leave to 95. Then, okay, let me work in backwards to see how much I need to set aside each month so that I can reach that goal. So once again, number one, you have to decide that you want to change. And number two, you have to know exactly what you want so that number three, you can reverse engineer and reach your goals.
Here's a challenging question someone posted. What if they're working and then they go through a period of unemployment? What happens with the insurance? Does it just go away because now they've just invested all this
money?
No,
you still have to pay that. You always, listen, guys, I don't care what happens. You always have to pay the insurance. Because if you die tomorrow and your family don't have your insurance policy, they're not going to be able to bury you. So, in my opinion, I think insurance goes before everything.
You're speaking of a raisin in the sun.
Less insurance. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Girl, you just brought up a raisin in the sun.
Oh yeah, I was. I think TBA was talking about that the other day. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, please tell the people. There might be a pocket of people who are not familiar with that story.
Yeah, actually, guys. You know, to be honest, I believe that one of my white teachers. We read that either when I was in junior high school or high school, I can't remember. But to make a long story short, I believe there was a black family in Chicago. Daddy died, mom was left, and then there was the mom had a son, and the son was married to a lovely black woman, and they may or may not have a child, I couldn't remember. But what happened is that there was a life insurance policy. I believe it was for $30,000, I'm not sure. And the son was like, oh, I need that $30,000 because I want to open up a liquor store. Nothing wrong with that. But he only wanted to open up the liquor store. So basically, here's $30,000. Oh, I'm going to take all of that and open up this liquor store. But the thing is, you never put all your eggs in a basket. But on the other side, his mom was like, listen, I'm not doing that. I just want to buy a house somewhere and just stay under the radar. But at the end of the play or the story, I believe Mr. Willie took all their money. And I don't even know why Mr. Willie had their money anyway. So I still don't really understand that part. But the point of the story is, as black people, we have to have insurance. But not only that, you also have to have a strategy on how to use the insurance. Yes, it is very uncomfortable to talk about. Even my boyfriend is uncomfortable talking about it, but we have to talk about these things. What happens if I die? What happens if you die? I mean, it's just a part of life, and we just have to, as best as we can, we have to have a policy, we have to have a strategy to execute it. That's it. I mean, you don't have to, and then you won't get buried, but I think you want to get buried, and I think you do want to have money for your descendants, so.
And this is an excellent time to bring up some people that you guys can look up to who've taken insurance policies and done the right thing. Now that we got a raisin in the sun out of the way, let me reintroduce you to Master P.
Oh, yeah.
If you know anything about this Louisiana rapper, he started off with an insurance policy left to him by his grandfather. And the empire that you know today and the son that you know as Romeo and all of the businesses that he is just... He's almost like Shark Tank for black people, with people who have great business ideas. They come to him and he partners up, he helps them out. And it's because of the seed money left by a grandfather who made sure that when, you know, it's not selfish, but this is what legacy looks like. This is what generational wealth looks like. It's for that grandfather while he was living and breathing saying, I will leave something and the right person will take it, that one seed, drop that seed in that ground, and a whole orchid of apples. When I'm no longer on the planet, that one seed I spit into this ground, that seed is that child, will manifest it to the multi-million dollar industry that $10,000 started with. Do you have any other?
$10,000? It was only $10,000?
That's all it was.
Dang, Master P is the man. I didn't know. I thought it was more like $30,000. I didn't know it was $10,000. Wow. Wow. Amazing.
Now, are there other examples of people that you know that we could look up to or read books and see within our own, people that look like us or people that don't, that just got it right when it comes to,
you know, I mean, I hate to say this, but like, sometimes we got to get the answers from other people, and that's okay. Now, when it comes to reparations, No, that answer has to come from us. But for other topics, sometimes you have to go outside your race. Sometimes you have to go outside your genre. Sometimes you just have to go elsewhere. And that's okay. Success is success. So, like, for me, like, a lot of my, well, I wouldn't say a lot, but some of, well, okay, yeah, a lot of my policies come from Robert Kiyosaki, which is Rich Dad, Poor Dad. So all the being frugal, all the, oh, I'm self-employed, even though I'm working for someone and I'm building my assets. Like, I've gotten so much from that man. Even, and he, like I said, he's a Japanese guy, Japanese-American, but his stuff works. But what I do, I take his stuff, and I always give everybody praises, you know, shout out to Rich Dad, Poor Dad, but then I have to repackage it for blacks, because we have our own, you know, stuff to deal with. Like, and shout out to Boyce Watkins. I take a lot of my practices from him too, because Boyce is like, listen, I get it, guys. Y'all ain't got, because I really want to buy some Vanguard stock, but it's $400 a pop, and I've been sending my tricking money to my mom. So, but my point is, yeah, Boyce Watkins was like, okay, you may not have all the money to buy Vanguard. He said, but if you use Stash, STASH app to invest, you can buy half of the stock. You can buy a quarter of the stock doing for the last month. Because like I said, I've been sending all my tricking money to my mom. So, yeah. So, once again, I love Robert Kiyosaki. I like his practices. But then I combine that with Boyce Watkins. Because Boyce Watkins is black. And he understands what we go through as black people. We just don't have... I wouldn't say we don't have the capital, we do, but we also have to deal with racism and getting fired and not having generational wealth. So we just got our own issues that we have to deal with.
That's right. And while we're on this, people just start to take off the rosy tinted glasses, look at your celebrities differently, understand when that MTV Cribs came out, sometimes when people got offered an episode, they had a house that they just rented for that episode. That was in their reality. Keep in mind that when you're looking up to celebrities, Taraji P will be the first to tell you she's the lowest paid in her industry. There's some movies that you like her for, but she's the type of sister that'll let you know, hey, that one check couldn't have carried me the 5 years until the next role. Any actors and actresses that you look up to that are black, they're not going to get paid the monies that you're thinking in your mind. And each time they get an assignment or a job, that there are a big old time lapse between the next check. Any celebrity that you look up to that's singing in the industry, and we are our own worst enemies sometimes. So we'll say things like, you haven't dropped the album since. Well, in the South, we call it the Chitlin' Circuit. Perhaps that person only had one album in the 90s, but they've been taking every opportunity to do a birthday party, to do a nightclub, to do a concert. They're not at that level that they can go on tour. They're by themselves and be the headliner. Now they're on tour with five other celebrities. Take off your rosy tinted glasses and understand that whatever you paid to get in the door to see them, before they touch that money, the IRS and all the people that made the whole stage look nice, all of those employees that served them, those people get paid and then they get what's left over. Stop idolizing the illusion, because that's the greatest thing for you to be the lowest paid people in America and to understand that I don't have money for this, but you got money for a $10 Starbucks that you just feel obligated to put on social media that you're walking around with this. That's not insurance money. That's the biggest scam for you to think that you cannot attain greatness when it's within your reach.
And also, I just bought my niece some Starbucks stock. It's not that expensive. You can, instead of buying Starbucks as a product, take that $6, instead of buying the Grande, which is $4, buy the small one, which is $1, and then take $3 from Starbucks stock. You can do that instead.
How long did it take for you to see the side effects of investing in stocks? Did it take you a year, 30 days?
Oh, nah. I mean, to be honest, let me just put it like this. Like, because, like, I listened to Voice in 2017, But like I said, it's like I was also investing with my financial advisor. So I have a different portfolio for mutual stocks, mutual funds. But with Voice, I really started seeing it. And I don't want to say more recently, but when I started actively investing, because to be honest, it kind of became an addiction to me, like literally, because I was working full time with the cram school and then my university part time money. That was my trick and money. I was literally investing all of that into stocks. Like I'm so addicted to doing it now. So I would say this, the more you put in, and you have to know what you're doing, guys, the more you get out. So I'm not just saying, oh, let me just buy a bunch of random. I'm not saying that at all. You can read about, who is it? Buffett. Buffett has good books on it. Listen to Boyce Watkins. Stock up with Larry Jones. So the last two people I just mentioned are black. But obviously, Warren Buffett's white. What are they called? The Wall Street Trapper.
Trapper. I was just going to say him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And for those of you who don't know, the Wall Street Trapper was behind bars, went inside the library, read the books about Warren Buffett, understood the wealth that was going on in the streets with selling drugs that got him behind bars, came out as a new man, and yes, you can find him on CNN, you can find him on the Forbes list. He's on this mission, not just leaving a legacy for his one daughter, but also bringing an entire community. But leaving this legacy for all of us to be more self-invested, to take this thing by the wheel, like she said. If you're gonna drink Starbucks, get the smallest one and invest in it. If you're gonna walk around with the Louis, with all the things, with the Tesla, make sure you have some stock. And you're saying that you're seeing a great
ROI.
And also,
Tesla just went up, and I do have Tesla stock that just went up. So my account showed like pluses. I was like, yay! I was so happy. And also Louis Vuitton, I invest in that for either my mom or sister, one of them like it, and that's gone up. So, yeah, absolutely.
Yes. So have you been seeing that return on your investment? That's the question that people want to know.
Yes, I have. And what I would say is that because I would say 2020, and I'm not saying that I haven't been investing, but I've had more capital. So now that I have more capital, I was investing more heavily. So I was able to see the returns a lot quickly, if you guys get what I'm saying. So I'm not saying that like you won't see it within a year, but if you're just investing $5 a week, it's going to take a little bit for that to, you know, build up to one whole stock. Eventually it will get there, and then you'll start seeing your returns.
All right.
So the answer is yes. Yeah.
So what about cryptocurrency?
Oh, girlfriend. Yes. Okay. Let me just say this. So I live in Japan, right? And I'm not going to say which company I use. Now, what I'll say about crypto is that crypto is not as easily transferable as you would think, because the company I was using in Japan, for some reason, they were like, oh, we're going to close your account, yada, yada, woo, woo, woo. And they wouldn't even tell me why. So then I had to transfer all my currency out, and I had to sell some of it, and then the company didn't even close my account. So I was like, so why y'all even email me and have me panic like that? So my point is, like, it's not as transferable as you think, and I'm not sure how liquid it is either. I'm not saying that I'm uncomfortable with crypto. I would say the safest one would be Bitcoin. Bitcoin is, I think, is 61,000 this week or last week. No, this week. This week, I think it's 61,000. So if I were you, I would invest in Bitcoin. But once again, this is a buy and hold strategy. So once I buy a stock, I usually do not sell it. I hardly ever sell it. So does that answer your question about the cryptocurrency?
That's right. It does. I remember about 3 years ago, people laughed at me when it came down to the Bitcoin, because it was just like, started off with me with a $3 one, and then there was a slump. Which, you know, these things will happen, and it happened for a long time.
Sorry, can I interject? You said that 3 years ago. So hold on. It's 2020. So that was 2021, 2020, 2019, 2018?
Yes.
They were laughing at you. But I remember going to Africa in 2018, and I think Bitcoin was 6,000 a pop then,
Exactly.
right? It was like 6,873. I think I wrote that in my book exactly.
It's just ironic that when it took its slump, people were like, "Oh, I told you," as if it would not come back. Like she, Dr.
I
Odom just
know.
let you guys know the 61,000. There are all kinds of memes on Facebook, mean things that we said as a black community, because why? Of course, this is something brand new. Just as brand new as the internet was for us at one time. Just as brand new as cell phones were for a generation that didn't have them growing up. So people laughed and said these things wouldn't be normalcy. But like Dr. Odin said on this Freedom Friday, baby, $61,000. And my very first piece, way years ago, was just someone who owed me some money and they didn't have the cash, so they just paid me with $3 worth of Bitcoin. I didn't know what it was. It just held and grew and grew and took a slump and grew.
Yeah, you just buy it.
So, before we end
Yeah,
the show,
you just buy it and hold it.
that's
I'm sorry, go ahead.
right. It appreciates with time. The same way, if you don't get in the game, I know a lot of you are saying, "I'm not going to invest in something I don't understand," but I'm going to keep it to you
Well, then
simple.
study it.
Exactly.
It's like you guys are on TikTok. You can study how to invest.
In YouTube University and TikToks, and know that when you got into the relationship you're in or the friendship you're in, you brought value with time, didn't it? So before we close out the show, I want to ask you if you have anything that you want to share with the people, because I know next time we want to get into NFTs. Are you familiar with that?
Hold on. Y'all know I'm dyslexic. Hold on. NFTs.
Yes.
Oh, is that hit me with this. I think I know what it is. Would you mind elaborating?
Yes, let me give the people a little teaser. Well, you know, if you're an artist out there, your artwork only makes money when you die. Think about Michelangelo, all the artists around the world, that only once upon death is the value. Actually, the artist never physically gets paid. So now, using digital currency, there's something called NFTs. And people have the same Bitcoin concept of investing in an artist's work. And if you can Google 12-year-old NFT, you're going to see black children, white children, children all over the world who use their own little iPads and coding and created some digital artwork that could look crazy as all get out. But these children, 12-year-olds, are multimillionaires because they have embraced
Well, good.
that
I love that.
cryptocurrency is going nowhere. And this changes the trajectory for artists in knowing that you don't have to die anymore, but you can prosper off of it while you're living.
I definitely want to look into that. I mean, because like I said, I would love for us to talk about retirement, and this is a great way to retire.
Girlfriend, right now I got students that I'm sitting here who are artists, and I'm giving them NFT articles and telling them, "Look, I love and admire your artwork. I want you to be self-invested. Know I'm your number one fan," knowing their families will support them. Because that's a part of my retirement portfolio. I want to live to see you be great, baby. Let this $1,000 thing or this initial investment I put in be worth something greater. To leave you guys on the show with this, some meme I saw on Facebook this week. This guy said to his mom, "I can either wire transfer you $5,000 for your birthday or buy you this NFT art." The mother chose the money, and then you scrolled over to the next picture and noticed the artwork was worth over $50,000. Ooh, it sounds like a game show. Life is a game. Don't play no games with my life and my money. So, guys, Dr. Odin, give us some love before you leave. Any wisdom that you want to share with people?
Well, I mean, like I said, I think you really hit upon it when you were saying with the Wall Street trapper, his one child. I have no children. And the reason, and please, any of my future descendants, if you're listening to me, please do not take offense to this. But I've always said to myself, I never wanted any stupid children to get in the way of me making it big. And I know that sounds so selfish, but that is how I feel. And I just feel, I've always felt that you should have children when you're married and you're financially dependent. You're financially independent. So that means be married and then be able to take care of your kids. You know, I never wanted to, even my own kids, to get in my way of being successful. And I know that may sound mean, but that's just how I've always felt. So, guys, you have to take this kid thing serious. Kids are not, I mean, I have a guinea pig, baby Charlie, but kids are not pets. You can't just put them in a cage. You know, they are human beings that you have to nurture. Children need two parents. Children need stability. They need money. They're very, very expensive. They're the most expensive, you know, investment that you have. You have to take child rearing very, very seriously and stop doing this hot girl summer all through your 20s, you know, because women, we're the ones that have to carry the babies, and then you're just making it hard on yourself to get a mate at the end, because men, and I know you guys might get mad at this, men don't want to take care of a woman with a bunch of babies. He don't want to take care of baby mamas, and that's his choice. So yeah, all I'm saying is that kids need to be had when you're married and you are financially able to take care of them.
Ooh, girl, while we stepping on toes, this is going to be a great topic.
Yeah, people going to be mad at me. They're going to be mad at me.
Well, they'll be mad when I say this. I want to leave you guys with this notion. I've stood in many countries as a teacher, and I have stood before classrooms of children that no one had a father at home. No one came from marriage. I've stood as a spiritual person, knowing that some of these children have been victimized and were already born into circumstances that they were unwanted. Dr. Odin's advice today is that although we can't change the past, let's move forward doing better. And until next time, guys, do bye-bye, boo.